this session end was unlike any other we've seen as lawmakers blew past their midnight deadline.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we recap the recently concluded Massachusetts state legislative session with Matt Murphy from Statehouse News Service. While there was a flurry of activity on Beacon Hill in the closing days of the Massachusetts state legislative session, the last for two-term Republican Governor Charlie Baker. Baker signed a nearly $53 billion budget that includes spending increases, and lawmakers sent the governor a series of reforms to how the state oversees soldiers' homes, following the devastating COVID outbreaks during the height of the pandemic. I talked about that and the fall campaign with Matt Murphy from Statehouse News Service.
Well, it was certainly a big flurry of activity, which is fairly standard on Beacon Hill. A lot of these major decisions on these big pieces of legislation often trickle down to the final closing days. But this session end was unlike any other we've seen as lawmakers blew past their midnight deadline on July 31st, staying in session basically for 23 hours straight, concluding at 10 a.m. in the morning as they scrambled to get major pieces done. And we did see compromise on a number of bills. You mentioned the Soldiers Home Oversight Bill, reforming how the state polices oversight and management of soldiers' homes in Holyoke and Chelsea. The governor offered some amendments to this bill at the last minute. They were able to compromise with the governor and get him a bill that would improve the credentialing of the superintendents in the soldiers' home and also elevate the Secretary of Veterans Affairs to a cabinet-level post. We saw last-minute deals on sports betting to legalize sports betting. That is awaiting the governor's signature, but all signs point to the governor potentially signing that bill. There was legislation to improve access to mental health and a major climate bill that is back on the governor's desk. The legislature adopting some but not all of the governor's amendments. Notably, the governor tried to use about $750 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds to create a new fund for climate resiliency projects. The legislature did not go along with that, but they did go along with some other amendments that the governor offered. So we were waiting to see if the governor will sign that bill. So, you know, all in all, they got a lot done in the closing days, but the major piece left undone, a massive economic development bill with billions in spending and $1 billion in tax relief, collapsed at the deadline. This due to the recent news that a long-forgotten law passed by voters back in 1986 that basically capped revenue growth in the state would be triggered this year, potentially sending up to $3 billion in state revenue back to taxpayers in the form of rebates or credits. Legislators tried to find a way to accommodate that law, as well as their plans for permanent tax code changes and relief for taxpayers. But we're concerned, not knowing the full extent of what this law will mean, whether or not the state could afford to do everything. And that is something that we're going to have to watch moving forward.
Yeah, at some point it seemed like, you know, those checks were just about ready to go out before word of that law reemerged. So what happens now? Is it possible lawmakers would return to take up that economic development package in the next, you know, weeks and months?
It's certainly possible, and that's what we're hearing for leaders. They are not giving up on this, but its path is a lot more complicated now. One thing that we heard Speaker Ron Mariano say to taxpayers is that a relief is coming. They will be getting some form of a rebate or a tax credit when they file their taxes next year due to this law. But prior to learning that this revenue cap would be triggered and these rebates would be coming, the legislature had planned $1 billion in tax relief. And this included $500 million in checks that were going to be sent home to qualifying households of $250 for a single filer or $500 for a couple filing jointly. They have thrown the brakes on this plan, as well as plans to reform the state's estate tax and increase credits for low-income earners, renters, senior property owners, and parents with children. What happens now is the lawmakers say they are going to wait to see what the final calculations on state revenue is and how much in rebates under this 1986 law will be going home. They can take up this bill during informal sessions for the rest of the year. But as I said, it gets more complicated because any objection from any single lawmaker could block the whole package. And it's not just tax relief in this bill. This was a more than $4 billion bill that had a lot of investments in it for hospitals, for port infrastructure, for environmental spending, and other priorities, not to mention the local earmarks for projects in lawmakers' home districts. They may try to take up this spending separately and get it through with unanimous consent. They were relying on a mix of surplus money, ARPA money, and long-term borrowing. If they are able to get a bill through during informal sessions, it will likely be a much smaller bill because without the ability to take roll call votes, they won't be able to authorize long-term borrowing in this bill, so they may have to scale it back. But this is still a work in progress and something that lawmakers are going to be working on as they move into September and the fall.
Let me ask you about another complicated part of all this, and that's East-West Rail. We know that there is a federal-state partnership component to the expansion of East-West Rail. Congressman Richard Neal, who has lent his support for the project, wants a new state authority to oversee it. Where did things leave off in the state legislature with regard to rail expansion?
Yeah, there's a lot of support in the legislature for moving forward with East-West Rail, and we saw them send the governor a bill, $11 billion transportation infrastructure spending bill that had, I believe it was $275 million to further the development of East-West Rail, which, as you mentioned, would connect Eastern Mass, Boston, Worcester, with cities like Springfield and Pittsfield with passenger rail. So a significant amount of money. Intended to signal to the federal government that the state is serious about this, but the legislature is taking a little more time with this idea of creating a new rail authority to oversee this project and the expansion of passenger rail in Western Massachusetts. And for now, this is something that they're exploring. Will likely be revisited in the new session come January when there will be a new governor in place. But certainly not dead for now, but legislators feeling like they have more time to consider what the cost would be of standing up a new agency to oversee this and whether it's not it's needed or if it could be absorbed within the more established transportation infrastructure in Massachusetts.
Well, you've brought us to my next question, which is Governor Baker is on his way out. He's wrapping up his second term. As we speak here in August, it seems likely that the Attorney General Maura Healey will be the next governor of Massachusetts, although who knows. So how are lawmakers getting ready for 2023? We know Democrats obviously have an overwhelming edge in the state Senate. What are they expecting as we get ready for a changing of the guard here?
Well, I think they're certainly preparing to deal and work with a new governor in Maura Healey. All signs point to Healey having a pretty easy glide path to the governor's office. But as you mentioned, you never know. She's not facing real opposition in the Democratic primary on September 6th. She, in all early polling in this race, holds sizable leads over both potential Republican nominees. And so it sets up an interesting dynamic. Massachusetts has long had, with the exception of Governor Deval Patrick for 8 years, a Republican, albeit a moderate Republican, in the corner office. And that creates some tension, but with Democratic supermajorities in the legislature largely runs the show on Beacon Hill, and they are preparing to work with a new Healey administration. They're already outlining some priorities that they're going to look to in the next session, one being gun control. They were able to pass in the closing hours on Monday legislation responding to the Supreme Court's decision in the New York case involving concealed carry permits. tightening some rules around gun licensing in Massachusetts where they could, while acknowledging that some of the restrictions that were in place do have to be relaxed in light of that ruling. But they have pledged to take a new look at gun control in the new session, looking at things like cracking down on ghost guns and other reforms that could be pursued. That is something that they will certainly have a partner in if Healey is successful in claiming the governor's office in November. There's also a lot of bills that just didn't gain traction or get over the finish line at the end of the session, hospital oversight being one. This was a big priority of Speaker Mariano's. He wanted to give some state agencies more authority over regulating and overseeing plans by big hospital systems like Mass General Brigham to expand their operations into satellite campuses and other facilities. This did not come up in the Senate. I'm sure this is something we're going to see revisited in the new session. So they are already making plans for the next two-year cycle.
Lastly, how do you look at Governor Baker's legacy as he prepares to end his second term?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the governor certainly has established a sort of a standard for operating in the governor's office, and one that he has tried to collaborate, despite being from a different party, with Democrats in the legislature. He's you know, drawn a line on some issues where he, you know, wasn't willing to bend, but he has largely worked with them to accomplish what he can. And it's going to be interesting to see with if there's a Democrat in the office, whether or not progressives in Massachusetts are able to really make the gains that they want to make. And they've you know, come to see Baker as sort of a moderating force, and that's long been viewed as why Massachusetts voters often elect Republicans as governor, as a check on the legislature to kind of bring balance, fiscal prudence to state management while they pursue things like progressive social policies, such as the abortion expansion law that the governor signed. And he's been a Republican who has been, you know, fairly moderate on spending, issues of taxes. He's, you know, tried to hold the line on tax increases and spending in the state budget. But when it comes to things like abortion, climate change, you know, he's largely been a solid partner with Democrats in pushing these issues forward. And I think that's going to be his legacy moving forward as he prepares to exit and a new governor takes over.
And do you expect him to make an endorsement in the race to succeed him?
You know, that's an interesting question. He's so far dodged it, saying he's focusing on the work. Now that the legislative session has basically wrapped up and lawmakers and Democrats will turn their attention to the election, a lot of focus will be on politics and whether or not the governor will get involved. He's, you know, I think it's fairly clear that he's no fan of the Republican frontrunner for Governor Jeff Deal, who has been endorsed by Trump. Someone that the governor has largely shunned during his time in office. I wouldn't be surprised to see him stay out of this race. He's not someone who really craves the spotlight when it comes to these big political issues. And given the fact that he's largely probably not going to be very supportive of Jeff Deal should he become the nominee, I think it's likely we see the governor take a hands-off approach to this election. What we are seeing the governor doing, however, is campaigning for some more down-ballot Republicans. He's endorsed, for instance, Anthony Amore, head of security at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. He's running for state auditor, someone in the more moderate vein of Governor Baker, someone who would advance that those sort of you know, moderate policies that the governor has promoted during his time in office. We could see him campaigning for people like him or some legislative candidates that he's endorsed and held fundraisers for. So I think you'll see the governor selectively active in the coming months. But in that big race for governor, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sort of sitting on the sidelines and watching this one play out.
Well, that's Matt Murphy from Statehouse News Service giving us the latest from Beacon Hill. Matt, great to talk as always. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Ian.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.